Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week, Senior Meditation Instructor Kathy Lamo-Jackson continues our series on the lives of the Karmapas, presenting highlights from the amazing life of His Holiness, the 16th Karmapa, Rangjung Rigpe Dorje. We examine his younger years and his teachers, his preparations for escaping from Tibet, and his unprecedented visits to the West. We also discuss the meaning and importance of the Black Crown Ceremony and His Holiness's role in establishing Karmakaju Buddhist centers throughout America. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Good morning. My name is Kathy Jackson, or Kathy Lamo. I want to thank all of you for coming. We're going to discuss the life of the 16th Karmapa. We've been doing a series of our spiritual leaders in our tradition of Buddhism. And so today we're going to be talking about the 16th Karmapa. If any of you have never seen a picture of him, when I started out as a Buddhist, his picture was on our shrines, not the 17th Karmapa. He hadn't been born yet. I don't think so. But before we begin, a lot has been going on in our country the last few days between El Paso, and Orville told me this morning about Dayton, and all the people that are struggling throughout the world in Hong Kong right now. Hong Kong's kind of gone silent. They're really struggling for their voice to be heard. If we could just take a moment and close our eyes and just say a quiet prayer for everyone, either using mantras or with your wishes in your heart. We'll just do that for about a minute. Thank you. Kempa Rinpoche, who's one of our main teachers, and His Holiness Gyawa Karmapa, many times have said, if you wish to pray for other people, you don't have to have a formal prayer in front of you. You can just at that moment dedicate something beautiful for them. Or I think many of us have had a really lovely sheltered lives to dedicate to that, to those today that don't. Your love and your compassion and concern are always needed, I feel. So today, we're speaking on the 16th Karmapa out of 17. And the 16th Karmapa, many of us have either met, I've seen him from a distance. One time, my husband had become a Buddhist. We were getting into a garage at Ohio State where we worked together. And I said, what are those guys down there? And it was a bunch of monks. And the Karmapa was walking in front of them. And he said, oh my God, that's the Karmapa. I had no idea what that meant. But Orville was excited that we actually saw him, but didn't see, you know, we just. Throughout this today, as I'm talking, I will share some stories from Lama Kathy. I bothered her last night to get stories. But first, I thought I'll talk about my reference materials. The first one, and I'll read them off. The first is The History of the 16 Karmapas of Tibet by Karma Tinley. I know it's an older book. It's been republished. And it's very similar to our main reference book that we're using, where it goes through each Karmapa with a snapshot of their lives, their miraculous instances that happened to them, their training, their upbringing, and what they offered to Buddhism. And always has a very symbolic picture. I didn't bring the other book, that this is sort of the next generation of this one. One of my favorite books now is The History of the Karmapas, The Odyssey of Tibetan Masters with a Black Crown by Lama Kunzang, Lama Paimo, and Marie Abel. This is from French, and this is very comprehensive. Lovely things in the back. This is for people that are listening. The next book, one of my favorite new, actually, I think I said favorite for all of them. When, you know, I buy these books, and I'm going to confess, I don't use them unless I have to teach a class usually. And I open these books, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this has been vibrating and humming in my house. The next one is called Karmapa. It's a larger book, oversized, 1110 to 2010, 900 years. And in Tibetan, it says, is it Karmapa? And it is really a picture book, which is amazing. And I'm going to pass that around today. Wonderful pictures of the 16th Karmapa, because he was the first Karmapa to go to the West. And then my last book, which is my all-time, when I need a book to read about old Tibet, when I need to be grateful for my life and to realize how easy I have it, is Blazing Splendor by, it's called The Memoirs of Tokul Urgen Rinpoche. He is the father of Mindja Rinpoche, the father of Chogyi Nyima Rinpoche, the father of Tsognyi Rinpoche. And he's a very humble man, very humble tulku. That was one of the first people told by the Karmapa, you have to leave and set up a monastery in Nepal. And he didn't want to do it the whole way. But he paints old Tibet, what it was like in the monasteries and the nunneries and the nuns, the 6,000 nuns in this one amazing hillside. And he's a great storyteller. So I thought I would go through that. So first, I think I'll do, you know, on cooking shows, they like to read the ingredients. First, I'm going to read some of the statistics. Oh, and my last reference, which is actually very useful for those that don't have these books, is are two. One is KTD's website, Karma Triana Dharma Chakra is our monastery, and our web address is kagyu.org. If you go there under references, look up Karmapas. They do a wonderful sketch of each of them, often written from people that were firsthand. And the second one is Karmapas. Here it is. kagyuoffice.org. This is the Karmapas head website. Great references, great free teachings on YouTube and in there. And also the one earlier I mentioned from our monastery, kagyu.org, wonderful bios on there of each of the Karmapas, particularly the newer, the later Karmapas, 15 and 16. Okay, but I'll just use my little book and we'll do the snapshot first. The 16th Karmapa, Rangjung Rikpe Dorje, was born in the Dege region of Kham, which is eastern Tibet, near the Yangtze River, on a full moon day of the sixth month, which is lunar year, of the year of the wood mouse. Now, I don't know, are there any mice or rats in this room? Not real ones, I'm sorry. Chinese astrology? So, Kempa Rinpoche is a mouse or rat. They're famous for really being busy. So I feel, there you go, that's you. I'm a tiger, so I won't eat you. But anyway, so he was, and Kempo Karcher Rinpoche is a mouse. And he is famous if you're sitting in, I was able to do a little retreat with him, and I remember I'm famous for ripping my clothes somehow. And he'd always say, bring that to me later. And he's a tailor, so he can't stand to see things out of sorts, and he's always fixing something. And I remember when he first hit his 80s, one time I went down to a basement where he has a sewing room, and there was like a 20-foot-long tanka he was putting a border on, always busy. So it's good to have be a mouse. So he was born in the year of the wood mouse in 1923. Some people say 24, depending on your calendar. He was born into an aristocratic family. Atub. I've never heard of them before. And it gives all the names of his parents and everything. Before the child's birth, so often I mentioned last time I taught on the class on the 14 and 15 Karmapa. These are Namtars. So they're spiritual biographies where they extract certain aspects to inspire us. So often the miraculous things. And the 16th Karmapa was famous for his supercognition. But even before he was born, before the child's birth, he disappeared entirely from the womb for one whole day and then reappeared the next. On the actual night of his birth, the atmosphere was charged with portents, which everyone in the locality could sense. They look for that for children to see if there's anything special. Shortly afterwards, Sitchin Rinpoche, Situ Padma Wangchuk Gyalpo, that would be the previous Sitchin Rinpoche, and I believe Jamrin Rinpoche, they had each known that he was coming, and so they were looking, they had visions of where he would appear. So they found him, but didn't have proof because all the Karmapas leave letters stating basically the directions of where they're going to be, the name of their parents, the location, and the time of year. And so they couldn't find that letter to completely prove it, even though the 13th Dalai Lama had said, yes, this is him. So a few months later, they found out that the last Karmapa's attendant had a gao, which is like a necklace, like I forget what that's called, like a locket where you put religious articles in. And his had a little letter from the Karmapa, and it was that letter, the prediction letter. And so then all the teachers are very excited because then they were able to realize that this was the next Karmapa. When he was 7 years old, so often in these cases, they're left at home. So they have some home training and their connection with their family, like a normal life for a while. Well, the normal nomad life, but he was in a richer family, so I don't know if they were really nomads. But often the teachers would leave behind major instructions on what the child should even eat and be studying and all of that. But at the age of seven, he left home, and he received his novice ordination from Sitchin Rinpoche and Jama Khonchul, who I spoke about the last time, of Palpung. A year later, the Vajra crown and the robes of the Karmapa were brought from Serpu to Kham for him. And then Sitchin Rinpoche invited him to Palpung Monastery, which is over on the other side of Tibet. So the main seat of the Karmapa is central Tibet, and all these other teachers are more on the eastern side. So there's so many stories. So I think I'm just going to keep going through his life. So he obtained all the proper initiations, that because this is a lineage holder that gets from the former lineage holders. I think I mentioned the last time, but some of you might be new. So I'll give an example with just a few teachers. So this lifetime, 17th Karmapa, when he was young, was trained by the older Situ Rinpoche and Gyaltsa Rinpoche. He's still being trained by them. And so when they die, he will find them. And then by that time, he'll be very old and then give them his transmission and then die. And then they'll be getting older in their wisdom and knowledge and having that transmission. So the transmission just keeps going onward and forward from teacher to teacher, so that it's not lost. It's considered the lineages and transmission is a very important thing. So the Karmapa continued with his studies, and he had his hair cutting ceremony by the 13th Dalai Lama, so he had a connection. That meant he became a monk with him. And he then lived in Serpu for quite some time. And there was great controversy about his teachers. I guess he was very smart, but probably bored with having to memorize hundreds of pages and everything. I'm just thinking that out loud. And so his family got involved, which just doesn't normally happen, saying, no, no, no one can. So the Tibetan way is, if you are not a good student, you get smacked. And his family said, no, the precious Karmapa cannot be hit. So, but if he wasn't, he didn't really pay attention. So he went through a lot of incredible teachers. And maybe that was on purpose, because he had so many amazing teachers. Most young monks only have a few. He had a lot. And so over the years, this is while things were, what we're talking, 30s, 40s, and 50s. Well, 30s now, things were still pretty stable in Tibet. He traveled all throughout Tibet, giving teachings, having we talked about encampments last week, where they would have sometimes upwards of hundreds to thousands of monks would travel together, setting up tents in areas, and so many people would come, and they would receive initiations from him and teachings. But then things started to change a bit, and 15 years before the Chinese invaded, he was already making plans. He went to India. He started setting up connections for future monasteries. He went to Nepal. And later on, of course, he helped fulfill some of the monasteries. He went to Bhutan. And he also went to Sikkim, which at that time was not yet, it was a Himalayan kingdom. It was not yet run by Tibet. And the ninth Karmapa had a connection with the Sikkimese royal family. And so they said, oh, yeah, if you have any trouble coming up, they can all come here. Well, there was a monastery there, but it was completely run down. But he had set all these things in motion. He had also, in his lifetime, had many copies of The Conjure and the Tanjur, the spoken words of the Buddha and commentaries printed. He went to the actual place where they printed it in Tibet, and then later that was taken, those plates and everything, taken to India, where they were printed and given to centers all over the world. KTD Monastery had so many copies for all the centers. I believe that was what we had that was lost in the fire, but we'll get another set. So he had a lot of activities. He was most famous for his love of animals. And so today, instead of just doing a rundown of his life chronologically, I'm going to kind of do some highlights. According to, what book is it? According to Rinpoche, he said that when you were in the encampment, so he would have his own tent, the Karmapa, and you would go in and the place would be just filled with animals, particularly all over the ground were what we maybe would call guinea pigs. They have their own, they're not exactly a guinea pig, but they're kind of like a little tiny rodent. But actually, I remember Kimber Rinpoche once, some of you know Kathy Osborne, her daughter had a little guinea pig. Rinpoche wouldn't let go of it. He said, these are like pets in Tibet. You know, everyone adores them. So the Karmapa's tent was filled with them. I don't know if this is good or bad, but sometimes he would dress them up as monks, and they would tolerate it. And everyone would come saying, you have to lock them up. They'll run away. They never left his side. They adored him. He also had, maybe even more so, a thing for dogs and birds. And this is where the story comes in. I'm going to jump timeline to tell the story. So everyone knew his love of birds. He had a gigantic aviary in Tibet at Tsurpu Monastery. And people would bring him all these beautiful birds, and he took such good care of them. He knew everything about them, about vitamins, cleanliness, nutrition, and, of course, how to make them happy. But he did something special to each bird that no one really knew what he did. But are any of you familiar with the word tukdum? When a yogi passes, or a great teacher, they will sit up straight, even if they were in a bedside. They will sit up straight for maybe 3 days, and their body, even though they're dead, is still warm. I don't know if you guys are familiar. This is sort of a famous thing with Tibetan Buddhism. He did this to the birds so that when the birds, most birds when they die just kind of keel over and fall to the bottom of the cage. These birds would just sit straight up. And I'm sitting there last night or a few nights ago thinking, yeah, right. So I had a talk with Lama Kathy and she said, well, the Karmapa gave me several birds, directly one, but it only lived for 6 months. But when it died, it was in Tukdom. I'm like, no. And she said, every one of his birds, he said special mantras. So that means they go into enlightenment during that phase. So he was releasing not only humans in their lives and enriching them, but also animals. And then Kathy said she had two more that someone gave her that were from the Karmapa. And she said that one passed when she was in retreat, so she didn't know what happened to that. The second bird, she said, so if you can't sit straight up, then you lay down on your right side, like the lion, like how the famous statue in India is showing the Buddha lying down. It's a reclining, dying Buddha. And the bird had tucked its head under its wing and laid down on the bottom of the cage. Kathy just said, these are the Karmapa's birds. She said when he gave her the birds, he said, you have to clean their cages every day. He told her exactly what to feed them, and he was really into the vitamins and fresh air and sunlight and everything. So those are just some of the little unusual stories about this really big guy, this giant on so many counts. In terms of connection with people, he just, being the head of our lineage, knew all the other heads of the lineages throughout Tibet, and they often met. The Dalai Lama, the 14th Dalai Lama, who came on later on, because he was a little bit younger than the Karmapa, said he was always there for any meeting because they were starting to have more and more meetings because of what was going on in Tibet, in China, the border. And by the way, I just want to make a comment. I have nothing against the Chinese at all. This is just communist China invasion and back in 1959. So in 1959, the time came. And so the Karmapa, with a group of 160 people, set out to leave Tibet. Before then, he had given many other people routes. He was... had such great supercognition, or we might call it ESP, he knew exactly where the safest route would be. And we're talking 23-day journeys. We're not talking a one-day trip. So, and you never know what you were going to walk into. And they had no problems, except towards the end, he decided to take them into Bhutan. And it was a really steep, almost like a mountain they had to climb before going across the border. And he said to them, if you don't come with me now, you won't make it. So they all went. Most of them were all walking, and they made it. And that night, there was a huge snowstorm, and the Chinese were right on their heels, and they were prevented. It was a snowstorm like they'd never seen in the region, because the Karmapa, like most of them, controlled the weather also. So there they are with 160 people, and India, I think it was Lord Nehru at that time was in charge of India. He came and met with the Karmapa and officials in Bhutan because they knew this was just the first wave of thousands of monks, not to mention lay people that were going to be coming from Tibet. So they were the early on people to talk about maybe different camps and where to go. He stayed in Bhutan for just a little while, but then decided to go down into Sikkim, because Sikkim was where the royal family was, where the earlier Karmapa had been. And he actually initiated having them tear down the old monastery, which was only big enough for a few people, and building a much larger one. So 100 monks were there helping build with that. So then moving on, what happened to all of our other teachers? So Kempa Rinpoche escaped with Tranga Rinpoche about the same time, because the Karmapa had an all-out thing where he was having everyone leave. But they had to do a two-legged escape. First, they had to go from eastern Tibet all the way into central Tibet. And many people have heard this story. Kempa Rinpoche tells it all the time. They were the Chinese found them, and they started shooting at them, and many were killed. But Rinpoche visualized the Karmapa was like on his back, shielding him from the bullets, and they made it to central Tibet, to where the Karmapa was, for an interview, because the Karmapa wanted to know what was going on with everything. And he stopped everyone. He said, you know, it's traditional to have your guru above the crown of your head, not at your back. So, and he looked right over at Kempo Rinpoche. My other favorite story, one of my favorite stories at Kempo Rinpoche, was when he met the 17th Karmapa. Karmapa had everyone leave the room, and he came over to Kempo Rinpoche, and I guess Rinpoche always had little thinning hair, so Karmapa always called him the old bald dog. So he went over and he started stroking his hair, and he said the same thing. No one knew that nickname. Rinpoche was so embarrassed, he never told anyone. But when the 17th Karmapa did it, he had to share that story. So, and then kind of talking about, we're now kind of talking about the diaspora. Our teacher, Kempo Karchu Rinpoche, ended up in one of those really huge refugee camps where thousands of monks died. And nuns, because of it was India, their lungs weren't used to the tuberculosis and bacteria. So many died from TB. Kempo Rinpoche had a really bad TB, and he had many bouts of it over the years, even in America. And he's really great now. I know many monks had one lung because of how bad it was. But Rinpoche said the most wonderful thing was suddenly, all four schools of Tibetan Buddhism were together in one area. And that was unheard of. So the Karmapa and other leaders organized so everyone would continue with their training. And so they did, and I think it really enhanced their understanding of Buddhism, because if you suddenly wanted to learn this, well, they were right down the street, not a month's visit away. And Kempo Rinpoche, though, was very sick. I am tying this in with my teacher, I have to say. He got very sick. And he was put into a hospital, which he had never hardly heard of. And because he was a monk, he was given good food and good drugs, good medications. That was very common, because often there were people there that were sponsoring them. And at night, Rinpoche would give half of his food and half of his medications to everyone else that didn't have any. He said there were so many people there that got nothing. They just lay there and moan. So another way of the incredible compassion of our teacher. When Rinpoche left there, he only left because the Karmapa called him and said, you're going to die here. You have to leave. You have to go to the West. Rinpoche said he'd heard of airplanes. He finally saw one like in his 20s or 30s. But they were really a myth, right? I mean, he came from way out there, way in the middle of nowhere. So suddenly there he is, sick as a dog. The first time they wouldn't allow him on the plane, he was too sick. He is so gaunt. So the Karmapa arranged everything, had him go. And by then, Rinpoche was considered a Kempo. He was already an abbot, had a lot of extra training. So he was a really precious commodity. And so the Karmapa had someone take care of him, feed him. He finally got onto a plane, got to New York City. And the stories that I heard were, Westerners found the monks giving all of their money and food to alcoholics, not knowing what drunks and bums were. You know, they just thought they were much worse off than them. And so this one lady who Rinpoche had stay at the monastery her whole life till she died, Mrs. Page, took them to Long Island, fed them, got them organized, and then the Karmapa finally came to America. He'd had enough people starting to go all over the world, so he finally did a trip twice to America. And the book is great. I think it shows him in Disneyland. And, of course, it shows at KTD him. He was first given a piece of land, and they were ready to start, and he felt something was wrong. So they thanked the person, Dr. Chen, for it, but said, no, this is not the right property for the monastery. So some other people, Jama Rinpoche the third, and Tenzin Chuni said, we think we found another place. So they went there, and the Karmapa came and blessed and said, this is it. But then they didn't have water. They were where, if anyone's been, who's been to KTD Monastery? So you know, it's up on a mountain. So they were digging 500 feet, and nothing was happening for drilling for water. So they called the Karmapa, and he wondered, well, how's it going? And they explained, and he said, oh, wait. And he said, and he went into another room, pulled out paper, wrote a prayer out, and said, you have to say this prayer to the local deity who has her hand over the mouth of the water that's coming out. And they're like, okay, because this is their culture. They believe that. I think that's so amazing. And sure enough, they said the prayer, and the water came instantly. So that prayer is in our Mahakala daily practice, just to let people know. One of the protectors of KTD, to thank them for the water. So the Karmapa not only went to the East Coast. Before he left Tibet, he had sent out Chogyam Trungpa, went to England, and then later he came to Colorado, California area mostly, the United States. He sent Kali Rinpoche out, who went all over the world and taught. And one teacher then went to France. I had never heard of him. And so there was a lot of activity on the West Coast. The Shambhala was very organized, or Vajradhatu back then. And they organized beautifully the Black Crown Ceremony. So they got to, he did so many Black Crown Ceremonies. And I was going to talk about that for a second. Does anyone know what the Black Crown Ceremony is? Ron, go ahead.
They close the black crown the first Karmapa or the
Buddha war? The first Karmapa. Yeah. The Dakinis supposedly made it from their hair, 1,000 Dakinis. And whoever sees this hat is liberated. So I wanted to see, there's a whole section in this book about the black crown. And as you see, oh, he doesn't have a picture of it. Sorry. I'll just hold this up. So this is a black crown, has really very specific design. And this book has a great blurb about it. In fact, I think I'll just put this on. I'll send this to KTC website because it's such a beautiful description of the symbolism. There's so much symbolism in this crown. But it's said that whoever sees it is liberated and their karma is purified. So there's different crowns. There's one that's like a daily crown that you see the 17th Karmapa wear a lot, this little black crown. But these are replicas of the one made out of the Dakini hair. I'm not sure if that was ever left Tibet. There's a really special one that was made by Chinese emperor that's in Rumtek. But I'm really waiting for our Karmapa to be doing the ceremony because the past Karmapa did so many of them all over America. And that really brought together a lot of people to get interested in Buddhism. And then he set up, so he had these big events, and then they would start teaching meditation there, started the centers. So we had the Shambhala group, Vajradhatu, going by Chogyam Trungpa, and then some of the monks that started everything from Karmapa more on the East Coast, and then it started coming together. So we were one of the largest first earliest centers. Lama Kathy likes to say we were the first KTC. We were certainly one of the earlier ones. And I always love one of her favorite stories is they went to New York City for the Black Crown Ceremony. And, you know, Kempo Rinpoche had set up our old shrine. Everything there was him. And the bowls, he knew exactly where to get the bowls and everything. And so we had these huge, beautiful silver-plated bowls. So they contacted Kathy saying, you're going to have to take the bowls to the ceremony. We don't have any. Not quick enough, because these things would happen really quickly. She said they would all be sitting there on a subway with their laps just full of these gigantic bowls. I just love those stories. And the other really cool thing she said about the Karmapa, he came to Columbus at least once. And he stayed at someone's house, and he really enjoyed just being with a family. He had never really, you know, seen how West, they all wondered how we lived, I think. And I remember my husband had just become Buddhist, and he said it was famous for the monks, it was a regular neighborhood, Linworth, I think, just to lounge out in the grass, because they had never seen so much grass. Like, our grass is, I think, different than theirs. And so they would hang out there, and the neighbors didn't know what was going on. But it was Halloween, and Karmapa demanded to give out the candy to the kids. Could you imagine? Karmapa was an imposing figure. She said he had such a good time giving out candy. I just thought that was the sweetest story. So I've covered a lot. I'm sorry, I've kind of jumped all over. But I want to see what year it was he passed. So in 81, he got very sick. And he could have gone back to India or Rumtek to die. And he decided to die here. He died of cancer. I don't know what kind. And it was a small hospital north of Chicago. I went there a few years ago with Kim because they're building a center there. And so the story was the doctors were rather shocked how sick he was, but when they would walk in the door, he would want to know how everyone was doing, of course. And they realized he wasn't in denial. He really wasn't in pain. And he told the main doctor, who he just loved dearly, a young man, he said, if it's my time, if my karma is up for serving humans, I will go no matter what you do to me. So the time in many of us know Colleen Reed. She used to be from the Chicago Center. She took care of him and said it was surreal, somebody whose body is starting to really change, but whose mind was just made everyone feel so happy and healthy. So when his heart did stop, they fully tried to revive him. And after a while, it just did not work. And the doctor realized the Karmapa would not want this. So they stopped everything. And then a while later, his heartbeat completely came back with perfect blood pressure levels and then just stopped. And so they let him be. And there were instructions to leave him in the room for 3 days. And they said the examining doctor, there's always a senior doctor when you die in a hospital to verify everything. And he came out and he said what everyone had said. He's very warm in his heart. And that's a sign of enlightenment. And he stayed that way for 3 days. I don't know if he was in Tuktum. I don't know all those details. They didn't say. But the doctor to this day is just amazed how he helped so many people in the hospital, yet was really suffering. His body was, you know, starting to really change. Maybe he wasn't suffering. So I thought it was rather symbolic that he died in America of cancer. It's so interesting. In the heartland of America. Very symbolic. So they're building a stupa, a consecration stupa there for him eventually. So that was 83. And then it took 4 years to find the next Karmapa. And so are there any questions? We have a little time, of course. I'm running short today. I'm trying to think. No. Do you remember any stories? We hear so many stories over the years. But I think what was amazing was how many... And he had everything to do... Oh, I'm sorry, I'll say one thing and then I'll invite you to speak. Thank you. He had everything to do with the curriculum we follow today. He sat down with all the teachers and said, they're educated. They're not like the people in Tibet that, you know, who have incredible practical knowledge but maybe didn't know how to read or write. He knows that we were educated. So he set down that we would all learn Chenrezig. And we would all learn shamatha. That was the most important thing. And later on, we would do karmapakshi. I'm sorry, I should go through the levels. We would learn shamatha, chenrezig, deity practice. We would do Mudra if we were able to, and Mahamudra. Said that was all you need. So, and that's what Kempo Karcha Rinpoche stuck to for years. And Kempo Rinpoche, when he set up retreats, he fashioned it after the Karmapa's instructions, everything in Tibetan. But this, the newer 17th Karmapa now has said it's okay. The translations are so good now that they didn't trust the translations for a long time, but we have such good committees now. So that's, now they can read it in English too. Yes.
Good morning. I have a comment and a question. The comment is that when we had the fire 4 years ago at our former center, one of the big losses in my mind was that huge picture of the Karmapa, 16th Karmapa, in the back of the shrine room, probably five times the size of that picture of 17th Karmapa.
Was it the 16th Karmapa?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember
very, that. Very, very, very impressive. And, yeah. It was a painting. It was a portrait painting. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah. A woman gave it to, she tried to do retreat, unable to, but she's a really good painter. So, yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Huge loss. The question I have, when you were talking about is keeping of the birds in the aviary, you said that a couple of them became enlightened. And I thought that the only way you could become enlightened was from being in a human birth. So I'm curious how a bird could become enlightened.
That's a very good question. When, if you're ever, you know, like in the woods or somewhere and you see insects, they say it's always very important to say mantras. I mean, that's why so many people say mantras all the time, because we don't know the karma of that being. They could have been human their very last lifetime and did something kind of bad or not so great, or just because they were ignorant. And so then they had to take a different form. But no, anyone, any being can become enlightened. The ghost and spirits can become enlightened. That's why so many of our practices, we do them for beings of all different realms. The human realm is one of the easiest, because here we see both the positive and the negative of life. And though we know we're in samsara, we have just enough comfort that we can practice really well. But we see just enough pain to realize this won't be here forever, especially with aging and with, you know, everything so impermanent. But it's true, the human realm is one of the ideal realms to become awakened, but any realm you can become awakened in. But some are much harder. Like the hell realms are really, really hard to become awakened quickly. It takes millions of lifetimes. So they're my favorite realm to pray for, because I have so much anger. But that was a good question. Thank you. And if I can't answer it, I'll let you know. I'm not sure.
Hi, Lama Kathy. How are you?
Good. Always good to see you.
Nice to see you, too. Yeah, I just want to mention that I think when we met a previous president of the KTD, Tenzin Choni, I guess he left Tibet with 16 Karmapa.
Yes. This is a president, the former president of KTD Monastery, Tenzin Choni, yes. He just retired after being the director all these years, yes.
Yeah, so he, I'm sure, I don't know how to say it, but yeah.
So what is your question? How is he?
No, just, I guess he's kind of a little bit like a historical figure to able to be with 16 Karmapa, and one of the 660 people to travel with him. So.
You know, it's interesting. I remember in the books they noted that Sita Rinpoche did not travel with them. I don't know if it's because of distance, or maybe they didn't want all their eggs in one basket. So a lot of the higher, like Trungpa Rinpoche, Kempo Rinpoche was with Trungpa Rinpoche. Sita Rinpoche was separate. I think Gyaltsen Rinpoche was separate. But I think the attendants that were close to His Holiness Karmapa in Tibet went with him. But I don't know the others. But definitely Tenzin Choni, yeah.
Then the other thing I heard was, I guess 16 Karmapa came to Ohio Union, was it there?
Yes, that's from Orville, and I saw him. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we were, So if you work at Ohio State. So we were going into one of the parking garages, the older ones by Sullivan Hall, and we saw all these people going into the Ohio Union. And so what was going on there was he was doing a black crown ceremony right there at Ohio Union. In fact, one of my friends told me, she hasn't been around here for years. Her husband was Henry and she was Diane. Her husband was already in the room, not the room, in the auditorium where it was happening. She had to go out and go to the bathroom, and they wouldn't let her back in. They were, because the Vajra, when you go to an empowerment, they visualize on the ground, on the sides, and in the ceiling is a Vajra fence protection. And so she didn't get to go to it, but she said it looked like pretty spectacular. When I was, the first time Kemper Rinpoche, when first time I was Buddhist, Kemper Rinpoche came to Columbus. He used to come all the time. A friend of mine came from another state who wasn't Buddhist, and I said to her, I'll come out and get you. So I didn't know anything about this Vajra fence. So I walked towards the wall, and I bounced back, and there was no wall there yet. And I turned around, and Rinpoche went like this. So I just turned around and came back and sat down. And then later he told me what it was. So a lot of people got blessings there that day. Lama Kathy was probably there and everyone, yeah. And Karmapa always had, you know, an entourage. So the monks that just organized all kinds of stuff. And Tenzin Junie was always by his side. His father was a famous secretary of the Karmapa that was a lay person. And so... So Tenzin was always with him, yeah. In fact, do you want to take this and sort of pass it around? There's such great pictures of the Karmapa at Disney World and just all over the place. It's just amazing. You could just show people. They can just be distracted by the great pictures. They're also on the website, on our KTD website in the other websites of how I think they all took it in so well. Are there any other questions? I think, why do we, anyone have any idea why we're talking about all this? I mean, I know it's obvious, it's the tip of our nose, but we tend to take things for granted. I know I do. And this is learning about these miraculous things. We should realize just having a center is so miraculous. So, such a blessing. Have it be organized so well. Have all of us come together that most of us were not raised Buddhist. To somehow find this path again is rather miraculous. To find the kindness of our teachers. I mean, look at Kempa Rinpoche. He's 96. He'll never stop moving and working. I mean, and he always says he learned by watching the Karmapa. And Kempa Rinpoche always says he has no compassion. He's just trying to copy him. And, I mean, even down to our cushions, Chogyam Trungpa gave the Shambhala people this design. And said, make these kind of cushions. I'm just looking out here today. And then they started, what is the company? Samadhi Cushion. It's just amazing. We can go to Amazon today and get all these books. When I first was Buddhist, as I said, we had a different Karmapa on our shrine. Right, Ron? Do you remember? We had a different Karmapa. We had the 16th Karmapa's picture. And, I remember at the bookstore of the monastery, there was a contest. You bought a raffle ticket and for the next Karmapa's rebirth. I was around during the interim of the two Karmapas, but we still considered him to be our Karmapa, even though he had passed physically. But anyway, going back to the gratitude, I think some days when I get upset, when I have to pay a lot of money for my old car, repairs. And I think about, I didn't have to escape and leave my homeland, leave everything behind. We have it pretty good. Last week I talked a lot about, I'm sorry, the last time I was here, I talked about the 15th Karmapa and his son, the second Jama Khonchul, who was one of the teachers of this Karmapa. So I just want to make sure that you know that he was still very active in the life of this Karmapa. And he was Kempo Khartun Rinpoche's main teacher. And things still trickle out of Tibet to this day. About 10 years ago, a monk showed up with Kempo Rinpoche and said, I found this original picture, and I think he was one of your teachers. And Rinpoche couldn't believe they had lost even pictures of their teachers. And Rinpoche blew it up, and there's a gigantic poster in Rinpoche's bedroom. I think that's just amazing how we just take this all so for granted. So I think we should always be reminding ourselves of a lot of sacrifice went into all of this, and to thank them and to give forward. So we have a few more minutes. Are there any other questions or comments or criticisms or, yes? Oh, thank you. Lama Kathy mentioned that. The 16th Karmapa went to Dawes Arboretum because of Charles Dawes was a member of our Sangha, and his grandfather founded the Arboretum. He planted a grove of ginkgo trees. So if you ever want to go to Dawes Arboretum, there's a little plaque there, and it talks about the Karmapa planting those trees. Yes.
I just want to thank you for reminding us of how special this center is and how lucky we are to have it. I stumbled across Tibetan Buddhism in Nepal, and I'm sure that when I came back to Columbus, if I hadn't found this center, it would have just sort of evaporated from my life. But Then I found this place and was able to continue on with what I had learned in Nepal. And so your comment just reminded me to be more appreciative of what we have here and not to take it for granted, because it's so easy to think that, well, you know, everybody has this opportunity, but they don't really. You know.
Yeah, they don't.
We're extremely, extremely lucky to have it here.
Yeah.
This is a very special.
We're very happy you're here.
I mean, it's, thank you. You know, we come here and we just sort of think that, well, you know, it's just, you know, we come here to meditate, but there's a whole lot more that's sinking into us by just being in this space with each other.
That's true. I think also there's a whole lot more to just our whole existence, and it's much more wondrous than we realize. We try and make it very tight and limited, and it's pretty amazing that we know how to meditate. We know how to pray for other people. Not many, you know, a lot of you know I'm a chaplain. Oh no, this is being recorded, isn't it? All right. I'll be careful of my words. I was so fortunate to be trained with a lot of people, a lot of other chaplains from different faith groups. And they have a different set of tools. We have an amazing tool belt. We just, I'm feeling like this, all right, do this practice. I'm feeling this, do this. You know, offer the merit for this. I mean, we have an amazing tool belt compared to so many other traditions have wonderful things, but ours is very hands-on. And I'm very grateful for that every day. Thank you so much. All right. As I said earlier, lots been going on this last few weeks. Let's dedicate the merit now. Oh, but first, we have a few minutes. We should say Karmapa Cheno mantra. So the word Karmapa, there's a lot of question where it came from. Has to do with the activity of the Buddhas. They say the very first Karmapa, it was like one of his names because he was in charge of a Karmakagyu monastery. But the 17th Karmapa says that it's really important, though, to do the mantra Karmapa Keno. And that is from, Keno means please hear me, and not, oh, please hear me. It's please hear me with all your might. You ask the Karmapa to hear you, because the Karmapa can hear you. Many of you know I had a really serious stroke years ago. And one of my friends just happened to be at the Karmapa, 17th Karmapa's monastery. He just happened to get an interview that day. The internet was on that day. And he told the Karmapa, and the Karmapa stopped everything. He went and had runners go and get people out of retreat for me. Not three-year retreat, but small retreats to all do Medicine Buddha for me. Karmapa is pretty amazing. So let's do Karmapa Cheno from our hearts. Ask him for help in whatever way you need, or to thank him. So the mantra is, and you can do it to any tune, it's just, so Karmapa is his name, and Cheno is, please know me, know my mind, know my heart. And so we'll just start chanting now. Karmapa Cheno, 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 Karmapa Cheno. And now you can just say it to yourself. Karmapa Cheno, Karmapa Cheno, Karmapa Cheno, Karmapa Cheno. Karmapa Cheno, Karmapa Cheno, Karmapa Cheno, Karmapa Cheno, Karmapa Cheno. Karmapa Cheno, Karmapa Cheno, Karmapa Cheno, Karmapa Cheno, Karmapa Cheno, Karmapa Cheno, Karmapa Cheno. Karmapa Cheno, Karmapa Cheno, Karmapa Cheno, Karmapa Cheno, Karmapa Cheno. Karmapa Cheno, Karmapa Cheno, Karmapa Cheno, Karmapa Cheno, Karmapa Cheno, Karmapa Cheno. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.